Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Mark Houston. I'm an alcoholic. And morning of October 19th, 1982, the power of God showed up in this atheist alcoholic's life and separated me from alcohol, and it is that power, along with some disciplines I was taught in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, that has allowed me to not take a drink from that moment until this moment. And I am immensely grateful for that. And I show that in different ways, through sponsorship. I have a home group called Carry This Message Group I belong to in Austin, Texas. It meets every Monday night from 6 to 7, if you're ever down. Come see us. I never miss that group. I'm the treasurer of that group. I show up for every group conscience. You see, I love being sober. Longer I'm sober, I see God and experience God in the pots and pans and the simplicity of my life. For example, when I was drinking, at times I lived on your couch or in a car. And I'm glad when I woke up this morning and it's 20 degrees above zero, I was in a nice, warm motel room. I don't take being sober for granted. I had a choice of more than one pair of shoes to come and wear to spend some time with you. I had a choice of several shirts and several ties. That isn't how it was when I came in. I got a driver's license. I have an insurance card. And everything is valid in my life. I have a current mailing address, can you imagine? Had it for quite some time. Had the same phone number for a long time. See, I don't take any of these things for granted. The electrical company floats me electricity 30 days in advance. I didn't have any of that stuff. See, when a guy like me takes a drink, I give up all rights to operate on the planet, and ultimately I will either die or be locked up. That is my experience. We're all forged and shaped by the groups we, I think, first came into, by the men and women in our life who have influenced us, by our sponsors, and so it is with me. And I sobered up in Denver, Colorado, and I immediately fell in to a hotbed of big book men and women. See, I think God knows exactly what we need. This is how asleep I am. I took my first drink of alcohol when I was 16. I took my last drink when I was 36. And unless I was either in the military or completely unable to drink, I was a daily drinker, a blackout drinker. I placed alcohol above everybody and everything, as evidenced by my story and my amends. And I get separated from alcohol, and I'm about 6 months sober before I realized I haven't been drinking. Now, when you're that asleep, it's a problem. See, there's nothing worse than being an alcoholic and having 1 to 5 days off alcohol and then think you're choosing to relapse. Kept me drinking for a long time. The idea that I'm involved with my relapses. See, I'm a real alcoholic and I've lost the power of choice in drink. And when I look back, that happened for me very early on in my drinking career, probably by the time I was 18. But I couldn't see it. And that group that I got sent to, they didn't work off the assumption that because I walked into their meeting that I was a real alcoholic. Some of you, I think, might have known the first man who carried the real message to me, Don Pritz. Don died several years ago. Wonderful man. He did a great thing for me. He did not assume that I knew what it meant to be an alcoholic. He probably denied right up to his death that he ever sponsored me. Some of those groups I went to were purists, and the word sponsor is not mentioned in the recovery portion. They didn't use it. They didn't believe in dependencies. I made the mistake of saying two or three times in a meeting, my sponsor said, and I was told in no uncertain terms, I don't want to hear you say that again. What's the book say? What's the book say? No dependencies. What's the book say? Thank God for that. Thank God they didn't fall into that dependency trap. My sponsor says, sponsors drink, they die, they get old, you move, all kinds of things. They knew that. I called Don. It always looked the same. He'd ask me, have you prayed? If I said no, he would hang up. So I either prayed or lied. Then he would say, get your big book. He taught me many things in that process. See, when you're trying to work with a real alcoholic, every time you work with them, you're modeling something to them. And what he taught me is it's about God. What does the book say? The recovery portion. About everything. Relationships, money, health, name it. The big book covers everything. There isn't anything I've ran into since the day I got sober that I can't get a solution in the big book. One of the most profound pieces of literature I've ever read. And I've read a lot because I had my years in which I was going to get to know God intellectually. I think everyone who's long time sober goes through that. If you get through that, maybe you'll have the experience I had. I was taken to a place for almost 4 years. I couldn't read anything except the big book. It's as though God said, why don't you quit reading about me and just start living me? It was a wonderful experience. I was born and raised in Iowa, second oldest of four boys. Raised in a Norwegian farming community of 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 people. Hard-working people. Mother's side of the family was where all the Norwegian is. Very stoic. If they had an emotion, you would never know it. I had a 19-year time period in my life where I never shed a tear. There's a connection between that and staying drunk. Because when you completely emotionally disconnect from yourself and you think that that part of your being does not exist, that leads to problems. And I used to drink behind that. My dad's side of the family is lots of alcoholism. Dad died of alcoholism, 86. It said his aorta burst, but he died of alcoholism. It's all over that side of my family. That isn't what makes me an alcoholic. What makes me an alcoholic is I take a drink and I break out in a phenomenon called craving. And I'm going to drink until the craving's satisfied. My last drunk lasted a year and a half. A year and a half. Took me the longest time when looking at the first step to understand that when I take a drink, the drink takes me. I laugh when I hear people talk about they think they know what it looks like if they ever pick up a drink again. See, if I knew what it looked like, you'd have another speaker. Because that would imply I had power over alcohol. I don't. I am powerless over alcohol. I take a drink and the drink takes a drink and the drink takes Mark. And that's the way that rolled. And as if that wasn't bad enough, then that got coupled with the other thing called a mental obsession, in which I would have periods of time from the time I was 16 till I was 36 in which I would be separated from alcohol and I needed to not drink alcohol based on what I do when I drink alcohol and I drink alcohol. And not realizing that I'm not involved in that. That incredible first step. As far as I can tell, one third of the big book was devoted to me, the recovery portion of the text, is devoted to me finding out my truth. Why do I want to find out that truth? Because if you're a victim of the disease of alcoholism, you, like me, suffer from a deadly illness. And it kills and kills every time. 2 weeks ago, 18-year-old alcoholic left the place I worked 3 days early. Been there almost 90 days. Very young, bad alcoholic. Didn't think he was an alcoholic. They found him 4 days ago. His grandmother found him dead. 18 years old. Alcoholic poisoning. Alcoholism kills. I will go to any lengths to prevent that. Relapse is not okay with me. Because many people, like him, never make it back into the rooms. I have been accused of being serious. Gee, I don't know why I would be serious. The ones who accuse me of that are normally people with a lot of relapse history. We were talking earlier. My experience is if you want to stay sober, you better turn into a marathon runner. This is not for sprinters. The one thing I notice about the men and the women in my life who had some shape and influence on me when they died had several things in common. And none of them are very complex. They all had a sponsor, which I do. They still all belong to a home group, which I do. They still all sponsored men or women, which I do. They work with the daily disciplines of the 10th and 11th step. And they did their best to live these principles in their lives on a daily basis. Very simple stuff. The ones I see who drink, move away from that. I've watched people pray and meditate themselves right out of the rooms and get drunk. I've watched it happen via church. I do a lot of stuff with 11th step, but I do it along with, not instead of. I met God in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and in my own personal experiences through the steps. I don't think I need to go anywhere else. Do I do a lot of other things alongside that? Of course I do. 11th step, be quick to see where religious people are right, make use of what they offer, and I do. I'm a thief. Want to find out about meditation? Go visit monasteries. Go talk to a Buddhist who's been meditating 30 years. I do stuff like that. I find it to be fascinating. Go visit a monastery, Gethsemane, and visit a monk who's devoted his life to worship and prayer if you want to find out about worship and prayer. Say to him, tell me about that. How come when you wash dishes, it looks like you're handling something holy? You want to tell me about that? They started to teach me about all the things the big book said. I migrated out of high school into college, and drinking began to show up tremendously in my life. I wound up going to 4 universities, and after 6.5 years of college, there was a little thing going on called Vietnam, and there was a little thing coupled with that called the draft. And they said to me, it doesn't appear to us as though you're ever going to get done, so we're going to draft you, and they did. Sent me over there for 13 and a half months. Now, inventory will really mess up your story. I got a lot of mileage out of Vietnam for a long time about what a poor victim I was until I wrote inventory and realized that because of my drinking and because of my sloth and my laziness in college, I sent the draft board an invitation to draft me, and they complied, and then I got mad at them. Resentment inventory will change your entire story, particularly if you have any areas of your life in which you like to pretend that you're a victim, which of course implies that you are not responsible. I came back from there, went back and finished up college, got married and roared off to San Francisco on a new Volkswagen, $150 and a wife. Went to work for a major insurance company in San Francisco as a claims adjuster. What a great life for an alcoholic. Unlimited expense account, big Bonneville in San Francisco. Napa Valley, wine, outside issues. I had a ride. Amazing stuff. And I don't know how I got this way. I was this way for a long time, and I was this way sober. But how I experienced myself internally and how you experienced me externally, there was always was a huge gap. You know, it's that old thing of, I'll bet I'm not alone in this. I got constantly in my report cards, not working up to his potential. You ever get that one? And these people would tell me I was capable of doing all of these things, but inside I had a voice that said to me, it's only a matter of time till they find out who I really am. And the axe will fall, so I was always moving on to the next job. Left San Francisco, went up to Eugene, Oregon, and then Portland, Oregon. And my alcoholism, my drinking, it's getting worse and worse. And part of my story and my alcoholism, as the drinking gets worse and worse, the phenomenon of craving, the mental obsession, I begin to compromise in every moral value system I was raised with. Begin to commit adultery. Alkies are funny. You don't hear that word very much from the podium. We don't mind having affairs, but heaven forbid we commit adultery. I committed adultery. When you're married, that's what it's called, yeah. And the shame, the guilt, the remorse of that, not being able to give my employer a full day's work, and now I'm in that groundhog cycle, and it all feeds itself. And pretty soon I'm drinking more than I'm working, and pretty soon that job goes away. And I moved up to the state of Washington, and then I moved up to Alaska. Was in Alaska for a year. Hard place to drink if you're an alcoholic. They have this several months of the year when it's dark and several months of the year when it's light. And it gets very confusing when you walk out of a bar at 2 o'clock in the morning and it's broad daylight. You get very confused. Is it 2 a.m. or 2 p.m.? From there, I wound up going back to Colorado. Last 2-3 years of my drinking is when I slept in cars and on couches and things of that nature. And through a series of events, I wound up in a detox. And then I wound up going to a 30-day rehab, and out of there, I wound up going into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and meeting people like Don. My good friend Joe. First couple years in recovery were hard. When I sobered up, I had brain damage, kidney damage, liver damage. Everything I owned fit in a duffel bag. Didn't have a car. But I'd been separated from alcohol. 1 week out of that rehab, I wound up getting a job. I had that job for 8 years. The miracle of God's power showing up in my life. I remember I went to interview with that woman. I was weighing about 260 then. I had a suit that I was wearing that I probably bought when I weighed about 200. And I was sweating bullets because I was terrified. See, if you drank like I did and you get struck sober, and you got to look at this world through sober eyes, it is a very scary proposition. And I'm interviewing. She says to me, well, what have you been doing? I said, well, drinking in rehab. She says, no, I meant for work, you know. So I tell her, she told me later that every bone in her body says not to hire me, but she hired me. Turned out my boss was in recovery. So he'd pick me up a van 6:30 in the morning, and we'd be down there at 7 o'clock. Before we were done, there were 8 of us alkies working for this company. We was in the retail selling cameras and video and all that other kind of stuff, and we were breaking every sales record known to man. The president finally came down and said to the manager, what in God's name are you and your guys doing? He said, listen, they're drunks. They're just happy to be breathing. Man, they're here from 7 in the morning till 6 at night. And boy, that was the truth. Thank God for that experience. And then my head started to clear. And then I began that process of the steps. Really taking a look at the first step. I rework the first 9 steps once a year. I do that for this reason. There is a phenomenon I have experienced called reconstruction of the ego. I cannot defeat my ego. It takes the very best of me. And my efforts at the disciplines of the 10th and 11th step fall short. So I always take 1 month out of the year. Last year I did it in April, and I reworked the first 9 steps in a formal setting with other people. Formal meaning we get together and we revisit that first step experience. Doctor's opinion to page 23 and looking at me in this phenomenon of craving. What happens to Mark when he takes a drink? You know, this is how intelligent we are. As far as I can tell, a big book has 33 pages of information devoted to you and I answering one question. When I take a drink, do I lose power, choice, and control? You would think that wouldn't take 33 pages. So why would that be? Maybe because I'm looking for every reason in the world why that doesn't happen to me. Because if that happens to me, then I'm a real alcoholic, and that means I'm probably going to have to quit drinking. So I'm looking for the times that I went out and just had 2 and went home. But they're not very many. So I go back and revisit that. And I look at the time when my grandmother died and I'm up in Alaska and I get on a plane and I got 3 days to get to Iowa and I take a drink and 6 days later I wake up in St. Louis, Missouri, came out of a blackout and missed the funeral. And I wanted to be at the funeral. And I don't know how I got to St. Louis. And I got hundreds of examples like that. If I take a drink and the drink takes me and I see my God-awful truth that this is me. And then those incredible pages of 23 to 43 where I look at what is called the obsession, the mental obsession of the mind, in which I will commit the most insane act of my life, stone cold sober, on my power. And is that me? Do I believe that? The first step consideration, do I believe that I've lost the power of choice and drink sober on my power? My power, not me and God partnered up, but Mark's power. And I look at all of the times in my life in which I would have been separated from alcohol for a period of time, should have never picked up a drink, and I picked up a drink, and I see that this is me. I see on my power there's a time when I'll have no effective mental defense against the first drink. How does that translate in terms of the 10th and 11th step? As far as I can tell, the big book says that I am sober today because I'm in fit spiritual condition. Not because I believe in God. Not because I'm a nice guy. Not because I have a home group. Because I'm in fit spiritual condition. And if in fact I've lost the power of choice and drink and I have no mental defense, then maybe that's why I'm going to do the mental disciplines of 10 and 11 every day, which is why I do them. Because see, I don't know if today is the day when my mind says, you know, they didn't have Corona when you were drinking. And there's some new wines out there. See, maybe today's the day. I don't care to have that experience. So I'm going to do what I need to do to stay in fit spiritual condition. And in fit spiritual condition, the power of choice is removed from me. I laugh about that sometimes. You know, I'll be in the grocery store and I'm not present to what I'm doing. I'm in the internal dialogue, listening to the voices. Y'all know what I mean by that, right? And you wake up and you're in the liquor aisle, surrounded everywhere you look. You see, and that can happen to us, and we can be in a position of neutrality, can't we? Sometimes I just stand there and look at those beautiful bottles. See, I think on any given day, I still love alcohol more than most people drinking it. Because of what? Because of the effect it produces. See, I'm not a guy that just quit drinking, go to meetings, works with. Because of the effect produced by alcohol. The ninth step promises, when I took a drink and the drink worked, the ninth step promises came true in my life. You try and ask a normal drinker, you say to them, what happens to you when you take a drink? They will not use the words that you and I use.
Oh, I felt close to God. I felt at one with everybody and everything. They don't say that.
I remember once I said to my mother, bless her heart, she's dead now, but I said, she wasn't an alky. I said, Mom, when you take a drink, do you lose control over how much you drink? And she looked at me and she said, why would I do that? See, non-alcoholics, their responses to the questions in the big book about me and this perverse relationship with alcohol are very, very different. So I see I'm in those pages where they talk about Fred. Fred drank when there wasn't a cloud in the horizon. Talked about Jim. Jim drank suddenly. I've experienced with suddenly. The thought occurred. I have the experience of the jaywalker. I'm in those pages. That's me. Bottom of page 43. Once more, Mark, at certain times, has no effective mental defense against the first drink. Is this you, Mark? Is this your experience? Is it, Mark, your current experience? You'll hear me use the verbiage current experience. Here's why. I can't live off the food I ate a month ago, and I certainly can't live off the action I took in the steps last year, this year. I think our book calls it resting on our laurels. I've done that before. I paid the price. I don't want to pay the price. Tell you what happens to a guy like me, sober, just going to meetings. Between my 9th and 10th year, I got the opportunity to spend 40 days in a psych hospital in Houston, Texas. That's what happens to a guy like me who's just sober, doing nothing but going to meetings. Asking myself how I got there. Horrific experience. Can't find it in the big book. Came out of that experience, in many respects, it almost feels like I have two periods of sobriety, my first 10 years and thereafter. But I got released from that hospital in 1991, and I was down in Kerrville, Texas. And I went into the big book, and I started asking myself some questions, particularly around the 10th and 11th and 12th step. And the questions were this: what have you been BSing yourself about that you say you're doing that you haven't done? And I saw how strict those disciplines were. So I really recommitted, and I, from that day to this, I stay committed. I reworked the first 9 steps 4 times in the first 2 years. I had a lot of unfinished amends I didn't clean up. I missed that line in the 8th step, made a list of all ALL persons we had harmed. I didn't understand the connection, that everything is connected, that if I have unfinished amends today, sober, that has a connection between me and everything and everybody. I didn't understand that. I didn't do enough work with inventory, the resentment inventory, the fear inventory, the sex inventory. I remember being 14 years sober, sitting in a grocery store, in my car, outside the grocery store, afraid to walk in, because somebody might say hi to me. See, I need God in my life. I need to be grounded in the power of God in my life. To do what? To live life. I don't know how I did what I did yesterday, and the world expects me to do it today. What alky knows anything about a long-term relationship? Right? The most significant long-term relationship I ever had was the Internal Revenue Service. Lasted 14 years. I grieved for a year when it was over. But boy, I learned a lesson. I got a CPA, and if anything, it's overpay, overpay, overpay. I will not invite those people back into my life again. A line I work with all the time in the big book is, all Mark's troubles are of Mark's own making. That's one of the most strongest statements of power that you'll find in the book. That means I'm responsible for my life, all aspects of it. My health, my wealth, my sobriety, my relationship with God, my seeking, all of it. It means I got to give up the blame thrower. And I get a rest in taking complete responsibility for my life. When I go back through and I look at the steps, I take a look at what I call my current unmanageability. Another word for it is my current agnosticism. Areas of my life in which I still am experiencing fear. Areas in which I might be having trouble in personal relationships. Prey to misery and depression. And I take a look at all of that, and buried in the middle of all of it is fear, and I'm into fear because I'm into self-reliance, and there is no God. And then I take that into the second step. How do you look at the second step if you've been sober for a while? Easy. Is there a God that I can know who can take me past here? Take me past every experience I've ever had into dimensions of joy, wonder, love, service that I know nothing about. Because if there's not more of God past here, then God is limited. The idea that I know everything there is to know about God within the confines of my brain, second step is very exciting to me every time I look at it, every time I go back through. Is there more past here? Choosing once again that God is everything in my life. That choice, what an incredible choice. God is everything. Placing everything under that umbrella, that power, that protection. Coming up to my third step. Am I convinced my life run on my will? 27 years without a drink, drunk or sober, cannot and will not work. And I make a list of the areas in which I am attempting to run my life on my will. I start with people around me. Sponsees who won't do what I want them to do. Right? Employees. And I start to see where my self-will. See, the longer I'm sober, the harder the work. Here's why. My ego has a new face. It's called this guy, been sober a while. A spiritual man. An elder of the group. A clean car. Money in the bank. It's still ego. It's just got a different face. Hell, when you're new, it's easy to see all that stuff. You get sober for a while. Get some time, get some experiences behind you. The ego still operates in the same fashion. Just has a different look to it. This lets me see what I'm rubbing up against. How am I in my 27th year suffering from the delusion I'll be happy and satisfied if I manage well? And I make a list of that. Because that's where I'm going to see my current agnosticism. And then finally, the big book hits me right between the eyes once again about this is what's really wrong with you, Mark, the root of your whole troubles. You're selfish and self-centered. Big book is a fascinating piece of literature in that they wait till page 62 to tell you what's wrong. Prior to that, they have you and I thinking it's about alcohol. You see what I'm saying? You see, that's cruel. You come into AA and you think it's alcohol, right? That's what you hear. It's on the wall. It's the name of the book. You get to page 62. Goes, no. Root of your trouble is you're selfish and self-centered. And they're bold enough to even follow that on the next page saying, by the way, just so you know, your drinking's but a symptom of what's really wrong with you. See? AA from the day I came in is still a Cheech and Chong experience. What do you mean? Alcohol is not my problem. It's not your problem. See, if alcohol is your problem, Mark, detox would have worked. And that little light goes off. Whoa, what does that mean? It means if alcohol was your problem, we would have separated you from alcohol, patted you on the fanny, and said, go have a good life. We tried that hundreds of times. You'd go drink again. So we got to figure out the causes and conditions.
Okay.
Make that third step decision. Now you start to write inventory. I wrote inventory last year. Seven names. That's the first column. Second column is where my resentment are. I had 23 of them. I love to write the second column, and I don't pretend I'm nice. Nice Elkies scare me to death. See, I know better. Don't you love that? You know, it's like, you ever go to a meeting and you hear about being people pleasers? Can you show me the connection between me being a people pleaser and selfish self-centeredness is the root of my trouble? See, if I ever pleased a person, trust me, I had a motive. So I wrote all the second column. And it wasn't nice. Because I'm not nice on my power driven by my self-will. I'm driven by fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. I'm going to give you a little example how nice I am. A couple employees who worked for me, 2, 3, 4 of them, quit. No notice. Abandoned the job. Second column. Quits like a coward. A jackal in the night. He has no balls. He has no integrity. If he was a real man, he would have given an appropriate amount of notice, but he's a punk. See, I'm not nice. You do something that hurts, threatens, and interferes with me, I don't care how long I'm sober, inwardly, this is what you're going to deal with, right? So I finish all that second column, and then I go into my third column. I better see where I'm playing God in my third column. Self-esteem. I'm a loyal employee. I always give proper notice. I'm a man of integrity. John Wayne. I have balls. Yeah. You know, I am my money. Don't threaten my money. Just third column. See, and I see what I'm rubbing up against. Then I write the fourth column, and it turns the second column into a lie. And that's what better happen to you when you write inventory. Your third and fourth column better turn the second into a lie, even though it has a grain of truth to it. Otherwise, all your troubles are not of your own making, and you'll never get free. Mine are. Why? I hired him. I hate that part. Fear inventory. Written fear inventory many different ways. Most of the time I'll write a two-column inventory. Sometimes I do three or four. Put down the fear. Why do I have the fear? I get very, very specific. Get done with that. You read those two incredible chapters in the big book around the fear inventory, where it gives you a way to deal with the fears that you're experiencing in your life, where you're going to let God demonstrate through you what God can do. What an incredible thing. You and I do the work, particularly the work of 4 through 9, work with the disciplines of 10 or 11. God will demonstrate through us what God can do. I don't have any power to not drink alcohol and be a selfish, self-centered human being. Instead, I get to be up here with you this weekend, share some time with you. I get to sponsor men. I get to be of service. I can't do that on my power. I ask God to remove it, remind me what He would have me be, my third step decision. I'm God's child. I'm an actor. God's my director. I'm an agent. God is my principal. I'm an employee. God is my employer. And the fear can leave. Third inventory, sex inventory. Stay sober long enough, it becomes about relationships. About 9 questions in there you have to answer. So you write those 3 inventories. Last year when I did that, and we'll do it again this year when I go back through, is there were four of us went back through the steps together. One guy had 22 years, one guy had six, one guy had two. It's funny when you're going back through the steps and sharing inventory with someone only 2 or 3 years sober, because the guy starts laughing when I'm reading my inventory, right? I said, "What are you laughing at?" And he said, "Well, I just thought you'd be healthier by now." I said, "Well, you're wrong." A friend of mine says, "Don't get too well on me, Mark." So we shared our inventories. Very powerful process. Then I leave there and I spend an hour and I answer those questions. Bottom of page 75. Take a timer, set it for an hour. Whole bunch of questions. Construction questions. Questions about the stones and is your foundation in place and the mortar. Have you reviewed the first five steps? Do you know God better? What an incredible question to ask after an inventory. See, it's more Cheech and Chong stuff, right? I share this pitiful inventory with these three guys, and then I leave and I'm spending this hour with God. And one of the things that should have happened is, do I know God better because I shared this pitiful inventory with these three pitiful guys? And the answer was yes. You know why? Because my inventory is a reflection of who I am not. And in the process of reading that to these guys, that drops away from me. And I have a chance to experience more of who I really am. So I did know God better. What a loving experience that is. And then I go right into six and I identify the defects of character I saw when I read the inventory. I get down on my knees and ask God to remove them in the seventh. This stuff about unwilling to let go of, I gave that dance up a long time ago. I don't want to ever take a drink. I'm willing to let go of it all. And I never second guess what God's going to take and what God's going to leave. That is not my business. As far as I can tell, that which created my ego is the one that will destroy it. If God wants to remove it, so be it. I've never met an enlightened Elkie. God, we'd be dangerous. My defects drive me close to God. See? Made a list of amends. I had, actually, in addition to those seven names, I had about seven more. Within 2 weeks, I'd finished those amends. And I'm back at peace. And then I begin to pick up the disciplines of 10 or 11 again. Doing some work with Emmett Fox, some stuff with Thomas Merton. Merton will really challenge you. I love Emmett Fox stuff. I'd done some of that in the early years. Great book called Find and Use Your Inner Power. Power, Constructive Thinking. They gave an exercise in there which I have failed at miserably. I've tried it many times over the years. It's called a 7-day mental diet, in which you attempt to go through a whole day for 7 days in a row, turning your thoughts to positive thoughts. Jeez, I tell you. Just like today, I'll give you an example. I had an opportunity, I did an hour meditation today, and I was hooked up, just beaming and turning inside. And then I went to Starbucks. I decided I'd go inside, not the drive-thru, and I'm still pretty hooked up. And then I get in there, and there's this long line. There's these two ladies ahead of me, and they cannot figure out what they want. And I'm waiting. And I'm waiting. And it starts. See? So I'm going to keep trying the 7-day mental diet. We'll see how we do. Like the book says, I claim spiritual progress, so it's getting better. I was reflecting on that last year. I had three times in which I experienced extreme anger. Only three times. Now, that don't misunderstand what I'm going to tell you. Does not mean I didn't get angry. I'm talking extreme. And I tell you how much progress I made. It is so foreign to me now, it literally made me physically sick. And what I really need to look at is, why was I so afraid? Because that's what that was about. See, that's tremendous progress for a guy like me. Most days I get up at 4 a.m. I begin my day with non-conference approved 24 hours a day. It says, upon awakening, Mark considers his plans, and I go through and do the prayers. Then I read some meditation books, and then depending on the length of time that I have will determine how long I sit in meditation. I created a space in my bedroom where I have an altar, sacred space, and I spend some time there. So that when I go out into the world, I can be of service to God and to my fellow human beings, free of Mark, free of my selfishness, my self-centeredness, my fear. Free to enjoy, to smile, to laugh, to bring something back, to never take for granted simple things. Water, food, health, vision, you, sober, the list is on and on and on. To be that awake, to understand how precious it is, to understand it could be gone in a moment, to never take sobriety for granted, to be willing to submit to a way other than my own and give up what it looks like, to really understand that on my power I get drunk and give up rights. And so I do that third step, and I said to God, I offer myself to thee to build with me, and you do with me as you will. And when I live my life that way, what an incredible experience. Working with others, we work out of the big book. I normally meet a minimum every 2 weeks with the men I work with. They have varying lengths of sobriety. We talk about what's going on in their life. We talk about where they're at with the steps. We talk about their home group. We talk about those kinds of things. I stay immersed in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. You all are my tribe. And I'm clear on that. There's no place else I have ever fit in. I'm also clear on that. So I'm going to stay with my tribe right up to the time my spirit leaves this body. And you can't kick me out. If you're new, find someone who works out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and get after the steps and tap into the power of God in your life. You cannot imagine it. It is beyond your wildest dreams. There is a God who loves you that will take you to your knees weeping with the power of that love in your life. And it can show up everywhere, in your work, in your home, in your community, in these rooms. Don't miss out on it. God bless you. Thank you.